Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 95. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Monday morning is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Monday. You had a day off somewhat yesterday. Did you enjoy it?
I did. My bracket is totally ruined. I did not have one Final Four team make it. I don't know. Hopefully yours was a little better than mine.
Not much. I think I have North Carolina still floating around in there. But to be honest with you, I've been so caught up with compiling sack videos and other things. And I took mostly a day off on Saturday as well. A rare one for us, but I enjoyed that. Now back at it on this Monday. And the league meetings are going on in Arizona this week. Kevin Colbert evidently called in via a conference call. It doesn't sound like he's going to be attending the meetings this week. There's a lot of big pro days going on this week. I think the three Florida teams are this week on top of it, so it's probably not surprising that Colbert and I suspect Mike Tomlin will take part in the coaches' breakfast. I think that's on Tuesday, but I would expect Mike Tomlin to be kind of scarce there at the league meetings as well. Kevin Colbert did talk via conference call on Sunday, and in so many words, he said in all probability that the free agent signing period for the Steelers is pretty much over. That's probably not surprising on several levels. Here we are, 3 weeks or so into the new league year, and the available free agent list has dwindled down to a couple of inside linebackers, I think, and some street free agent cornerbacks, and that's about it. The Steelers, of course, have signed Justin Hunter, Niall Davis, Cody Sensabaugh, and Tyson Alualu. That's their four outside players. Early in the process, they re-signed Landry Jones and David Johnson. They've, of course, lost a few of them as well, too. They brought in Dante Hightower for a visit. We all know how that one turned out. Not surprised by Colbert's comments there, and really not surprised on his comments talking about how none of these signings are going to limit what the team does during the draft.
Right, and I think we had talked about that, and I'm sure most Steelers fans understood that immediately, that these were just death signings to maybe just slightly plug some of the holes at the positions like corner, like along the defensive line, like the third string running back, starting kick returner, throw a receiver, and there's an insurance policy. No one that's really expected to be a day one starter who's going to play significant snaps. I mean, Niall Davis could end up playing the most snaps of all just in that kick returner role. Again, Alualu is a backup, a rotational guy who is going to play and, again, hopefully is able to spell Hayward and Tuitt more than they have the last 2 years. But, yeah, there's no effect on the draft. And like we talked about the other day, I just can't see them signing anybody else until, maybe June, where it's not in the comp formula and they're after the draft and they can evaluate their roster.
Yeah, and I think they've changed those rules as far as where the time. It's either 2 or 3 weeks, I think, after the draft is completed where free agents signed after that point, no longer count against the compensatory formula. For a while, I believe it was the 1st of June, but I think I read something not too long ago that talked about either 2 or 3 weeks after the draft took place. Regardless, I think anybody that is signed from this point forward would be a minimum salary guy, and then of course the NFL only awards 32 or 33 compensatory picks every year. So you would have to it's hard to qualify at that point. Although there was a bulk of big signings, those things dwindled down to low prices real, real quick this year. But regardless, you know, I think Lawrence Timmons will factor into a fifth round value. Marcus Wheaton, probably the same for him. Jarvis Jones, what, maybe a seventh round value there. And, you know, the Steelers, of course, signed Alualu. We will have to see how that counterbalances. Justin Hunter and Nile Davis are minimum salary guys. And then Cody Sensabaugh, you know, maybe that qualifies for a seventh value or a sixth value as far as counteracting what has been done. A lot of time to worry about that and figure that stuff out, you know, in the future. Kevin Colbert was asked about the, you know, about the potentially signing Dante Hightower. According to Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he said, "We made an attempt. It didn't work. We're fine." He said, we move on. We're very confident in Vince Williams. Well, if you're very confident in Vince Williams, you probably weren't going to go out and look at a guy like Dante Hightower. I don't hate, you know, I've made this clear several times. I don't hate Vince Williams at all. I think he gives you a lot of what Lawrence Timmons did, especially downhill against the run. My biggest concern with Vince Williams is a lot of concerns that people have with Lawrence Timmons, and that was his ability to drop and his ability to cover across the middle in zone type situations against some of these slots that come across the middle. Regardless, I think you and I both expect Vince Williams, or I at least don't expect Vince Williams to play 1,000 snaps. Hopefully, they're going to do something a little bit different with some nickel personnel this week. Who knows if it'll be via the draft. One would think at this point, if help's going to come in that area, it'd be there, right?
Right. That's kind of the thing I've been talking about for a while now, is finding that hybrid player, and that's why I've entertained Mel and Fonwu in the first round and have done profiles on kind of all the hybrid potential guys you know, that are common and come to mind. Because again, Hightower, even if you had signed him for that amount of money, he was only going to be a marginal upgrade in coverage over Vince Williams, not enough that's going to really change things too much. So I think the perfect marriage is you have Williams as your starter. He's cheap, your two down guy, and then in obvious passing situations and 2 minute drills and third downs and all that, you find a hybrid guy who can match up against the Tyler Eifert's, the Gronkowski's. I mean, you look at this tight end class that's coming out this year, it's ridiculous. Evan Ingram, Njoku, Howard, list goes on and on. How are you going to answer those guys? And just in general, too, slot receivers and things like that, though that can be done more by the nickel. So I don't really see a guy on the roster right now who can work that unless they wanted to do something with Sean Davis and move him around. I'm kind of generally opposed to the idea. But this is a time where I think they have to explore that. They've wanted to, you know, run and dime the last 2 years at parts. Robert Goldenow just was not that guy.
And really, there's two or three teams that they mostly struggled against in that area. And one of them was, of course, in the AFC Championship game. And at this point, you have to think that the Steelers think, okay, we've got the team to at least, you know, win the AFC North again, make a deep run in the playoffs. But what happens if we run into one of these teams, such as New England? And you know, that's the hump that they've got to get over at this point. How do we beat New England, I think, is the biggest key for this team as they go into 2017. Colbert talking about, of course, I didn't hear this verbatim to hear the context and all. It doesn't sound like it sounds like they're not closing the door to D'Angelo Williams returning. But at this point, now that Nile Davis has been signed, unless D'Angelo Williams was willing to take a minimum salary, and all this assumes that the Steelers maybe don't get a running back that they like during the draft, which we all, you know, I think at this point expect them to do to address that position, it's very unlikely D'Angelo Williams will be back.
I think Colbert was just being nice and just covering his own butt just in case, because I can't see any scenario where Williams comes back. I think that writing's been on the wall for a while now. There's been absolutely zero reports about any sort of interest in bringing him back and re-signing him. So, again, with how deep this running back class is, I mean, would you rather have the 30-something back or the 22-year-old back who's going to be on a 4-year deal for pretty cheap that doesn't have nearly the mileage and the injury history and things like that. So it's a no-brainer to me. Williams had a really good career in Pittsburgh, a great career overall in Carolina as a first-round pick. It was solid signing by Colbert, but time to move on.
And if I'm D'Angelo Williams and I do indeed still want to play at this point, I just keep myself in shape and I wait right now, because injuries around the league are guaranteed to happen at the running back position on into training camp and preseason. And, you know, that's where his value probably will be the highest, and need for him. So, right after, you know, Williams was released by the Panthers a few years ago, I immediately wrote about him thinking how he would be a good fit in Pittsburgh, and he was. Now, he did miss games due to injuries, but I don't think any of us should forget the start of the two seasons in a row that he had with Le'Veon Bell suspended. But, it'll go down as one of the better free agent signings of Kevin Colbert's career, I think, but it was a short one on top of that. Kevin Colbert also talked about Le'Veon Bell and him rehabbing from his groin surgery that he had. Not overly surprising what Colbert said about him. They're not going to rush Le'Veon Bell back, nor should they. I wouldn't be surprised if Le'Veon Bell's very, very limited during the OTA practices. There's no reason to run him hardly at all during the mandatory mini camp that will follow ahead of training camp. Colbert, said, look, we want him 100% for the season, and I'm on board with that. Bell, of course, will hope to get a contract extension by the middle of July. There's no reason to think that won't happen still. Colbert did indicate, however, that everything's probably on the back burner with him right now until this team gets past the draft, and that's totally understandable because there's no rush right now to do anything with him. Get past the draft, see what you get in the draft, and then start focusing on getting Le'Veon Bell extended in the middle of July.
Exactly. It's such a chaotic time during the draft. I mean, Colbert himself is even missing the league meetings just so he can turn his attention to pro days and get all the information that he can. There's no need to expend any extra energy, even if Colbert might not be the most vital guy in that situation the way that an Omar Khan might be. But there's no need to expend that energy and time when you have all the time in the world after the draft and you kind of hit the dead period of the season for a team like the Steelers that were already behind the eight ball offseason wise by playing in the AFC title game and one of the last teams to really get back into the fray with their front office. No reason for Bell. So that's, I remember whenever the reports came out about a month ago that talks had accelerated and they were super close to a deal getting done, I'm sitting there going, what? No. Why would they be close to a deal? Why would not just wait till July? So that's a smart play here.
And history normally tells us when it comes to players with franchise tag that deadlines spur action. And exactly. That's why I think, July 13th or 14th is probably when we're going to see a deal with Le'Veon Bell. I will be shocked. I've said that several times, that if Bell doesn't get a deal, now we just sit and wait for the numbers, and it will be a wait, it looks like. Mike Tomlin had some interesting comments that I think are going to air, today on NFL Network, talking about the quarterback situation, or talking about Ben Roethlisberger's situation.
Yeah, what's the phrase that he used here? Matthew Marks, he just wrote the article about it today, just went up on SteelersDepot.com. He says, we better start sharpening our sword in terms of evaluation of quarterbacks and what's available to us or potentially available to us. That's just due diligence. So, yes, we have in terms of preparing for life after Ben was the question he was asked. So a lot of comments lately from the Steelers, higher ups about looking to a quarterback. And, Dave, I'm nervous. I'm scared. I don't want them to do it. But I feel like they are.
Yeah, I've prepared. I bought some extra bubble wrap for the TVs. I'm resigned to the fact that it's going to happen. I'm resigned to the fact that it's probably going to happen in round 3 or round 4. Is there any way that it happens before round 3 or round 4?
Here's the reason why it could. And I go back, and I've said it a couple times, Dave, but I go back to what Colbert said at the combine, that the quarterback class is top heavy. There's not a lot of depth to it, but there is talent at the top. And over the weekend, Tony Pauline from Draft Analyst reported that Davis Webb, the quarterback from Cal, is scheduled to come in to a pre-draft visit for Pittsburgh. So, I mean, there's due diligence, and that's part of the process, you know, pre-draft visits, but that's also some serious interest as well to go that far and use one of your 30 pre-draft visit, you know, opportunities on a quarterback. And Davis Webb is a guy that is probably going to be, I don't know, a top 50 or so pick. And so, I don't know, Dave. I think that obviously that interest is there and it's very clear. Will it happen? I don't know, but I don't expect them to walk away with a sixth or seventh round pick on a quarterback because I think the depth in this class is pretty poor. So if they're going to take one, it's going to be earlier than, again, what I would like. But that's what Colbert has said, basically.
Wasn't Davis Webb one of the guys at the Senior Bowl?
Yes, he was a Senior Bowl MVP, actually, and the quarterback class down there in general was kind of poor, and Webb is very spotty, but he has a huge arm, and he was productive, and of course, in the Steelers offense, that arm would fit in. Well, actually, mocked Webb, I think it'd be my first mock to the Pittsburgh in like the fifth round, because people didn't really know about Webb back then, but he would fit the offense, definitely.
Would he be the one you'd be less upset about?
No, I really guess I need to go into Webb's tape because I've let Sean do the quarterback because he's done such a great job with him as a former quarterback himself. But Webb just seems so erratic and he's just kind of a vertical shot guy and hope something finally sticks. And I don't know if I'd be super excited about it. I mean, obviously, this is a guy that transferred to Cal, lost his job to Patrick Mahomes. I think maybe the one guy I'd be. Again, I wouldn't be okay with any quarterback because I just, you know, me in this win now mentality, the Steelers have to take advantage of, but Patrick Mahomes is probably the guy I'd be maybe most comfortable with because I can see the upside, I can see that elite potential, and again, kind of will compare in a lot of ways to Ben Roethlisberger. So, you know, I can't discount them taking a quarterback in even the first round. As much as I detest that idea, I don't discount that, and I think Patrick Mahomes at 30 is in play, and Davis Webb, I don't think he's going to be there at 62, but does the team make a move up for him? You know, I guess that's not impossible either if they really like him.
And Mahomes, in your opinion, is a top 40 guy, right?
Yeah, I think he's going to go again. He might not even be there at 30. You know how things go with quarterbacks and teams trying to trade back up to try to get the last one or two guys that they think are viable candidates. But if they take Mahomes, it'll probably be a pick 30.
How you know, Tomlin also said, I think because, and talking about Roethlisberger, I think because of durability and how he plays, I don't know that we have that level of urgency, but we are taking ourselves mentally through the process. Not an easy one, obviously, but it is what it is. That's a classic.
What does that mean? Anyone want to translate?
It is what it is. That's what it means. It's an element of the business. Guys can't play forever. And he acknowledges that, and we acknowledge that. How concerned do you think they are that, look, I mean, we all expect them to play in 2017, but what about past 2017? How concerned do you think they are?
Well, I don't know exactly if I can gauge your level of concern, but they're pragmatic. They're a front office that has been through, you know, at least Colbert, at least Tomlin hasn't, but has been through the process of not having a franchise quarterback and finding and exploring how do we find a franchise quarterback and ultimately drafting one and being successful with it with Ben in 2004. So I think, you know, they've been down this road before and they know obviously how valuable the position is. And if you don't have a quarterback, then you're looking for one and you're not going to succeed until you have one. And so I think that they just know that that's a reality that at some point in the near future, they're going to have to find somebody else. And they're trying to, I guess, like Tomlin said, take those steps against it. They know that, you know, Ben's time is you know, he's not going to be here in 5 years. He's not going to be a Tom Brady and play until he's 40 years old. That's just the reality of it. And so they got to start, you know, looking at other options, I guess.
How many players do the Steelers need to draft this year that need to come in and contribute in a hurry?
Well, I don't like to necessarily put a number on it, but, you know, I want to walk away after, you know, the first three rounds, so after day two, and say that, okay, I got two guys that I believe can make an immediate impact on day one, and maybe there's somebody else that could do a part-time role or has that potential to do so. I mean, obviously, you know, whatever edge guy you draft is going to be playing right away, and, you know, if they get a slot corner, then maybe second half of the year that guy gets involved, or, you know, I there aren't a ton of positions up for grabs of guys that can come in right away, but maybe there's that hybrid guy that can have that role. So they have to get some guys, because again, the whole point is it's a win now mentality. You know, we got to find guys that can help the team right away, get them over that hump. So I don't have a number to it, but yeah, you know, it's why, you know, you can't just draft developmental guys all the way through and through, guys that can't play right now. And that's why I'm against quarterback, because he's not a guy that's going to help you right now. And this is a win now mentality for me.
Yeah, and I would put the number at about two. Obviously an edge and maybe a corner, or, you know, one of those, you know, nickelbackers that we kind of talked about. I think this team can win with the corners that they have right now and the safeties that they have right now. Now, does that mean that you can't upgrade it through the draft? Absolutely not. I mean, you know, you get either boundary or in a slot, because, you know, we talked several times about Cinquez Golson. It sure would be nice if he was able to stay on the field and be the player that, you know, that they drafted or hoped he would become when they drafted him. But man, 2 years out of football, or, you know, not playing and not playing a single snap. I mean, the cause for concern is there. And yes, I get they went out and signed Cody Sensabaugh, but, you know, Cody to me is just a depth player right now, and has a lot to prove. Now, the bar right now probably isn't that very high, right? In the slot of William Gay, another year older, and of course Cinquez yet to play. So I understand the move. I applaud the move when it comes to Cody Sensabaugh, but I think you still got to go into the draft with a mentality that we can either improve either the slot or the spot opposite Artie Burns.
Sure, both are in play. Both need addressed at the very least for some depth purposes. Slot guy is a 2018 starter concern for me, because you can't trust Golson right now. You don't have any sort of further evaluation on him, and it is tough for a slot guy to start, you know, day one. We've talked about that before, just because, you know, there's so many responsibilities. The whole route trees open up. You got to be involved in blitz packages. You're involved in the run game overall. So it's tough for a slot guy to start right away. But that's another reason why to draft one higher too, maybe as opposed to an outside guy, because, you know, obviously if you're going to get a higher talent, that ability to get on the field might be accelerated because they're a more talented player. But still, you know, you might not see a slot guy come in and start until second half of the year. Of course, that's all speculative, and we'll see how things shake up with Gay and Sensabaugh and Golson and all that.
All right. How are you enjoying these sack compilation videos I've been posting?
Yeah, they're great, and they generate a ton of discussion. Even on the weekend, there was a ton of discussion. I have not seen the Tim Williams yet. I was watching the Charles Harris one. You said the other day he's got a sick spin move, and he's got a very Freeney-like spin move, and he knows how to use it and set up tackles. And but he has the ability to win the outside as well. And for a guy that wants to win with a spin, you got to have that outside, you know, speed rush as well, that threat of it. You know, that's how Dwight Freeney won in his career, which is still going on. He won it not with six different pass rush moves. It was the speed rush and the spin. If you overset to anticipate the speed, we're going to spin. If you're short setting and anticipating the spin, we're going to beat you with the speed, and I'll dip around the edge. That's what, you know, I think Charles Harris is showing on tape, you know, to maybe not to the Freeney extent, of course, but very similar in terms of what their approach is. Pass rushers don't need seven moves. Have your go-to move, have your counter, and really, for the top guys, that's all you kind of need.
I think and always need to frame these correctly when posting these videos. They're obviously highlights. They're sacks and sacks only. Mm-hmm. But I like to do that because, you know, I keep going back to the evaluation of Jarvis Jones. I want to see how these guys win on these sacks. And I, you know, it's obviously just a small part of the evaluation process. But I think it's a good part of the evaluation process as well, because, I mean, you know, are these just sacks of four seconds or longer, you know, where coverage, you know, plays a role in it, and you know, these guys are just getting cleanup type sacks, if you will. How are they winning? How, you know, what kind of pass rush moves are they using? I think with Charles Harris, it's evident and has been evident for a while that he likes that spin move. He uses it well. I think that while he does have a better than average get off, I think speed to power might be a concern with him. You don't see him win a lot with the bull rush. Correct me on any of this if you think I'm off base. Against the run, I've done very little research with that, but it appears as though he needs some work in that area.
Yeah, and I think most guys at his level do, because they're always just been told to get after the quarterback, and they aren't always, you know, focused on the small details like setting a physical edge and dropping the coverage and doing the things the NFL's going to demand of them when, you know, you're playing against spread systems and half the time that you're unblocked as the zone read defender. I mean, it's a whole new world whenever you're not going to get much of that at the NFL level. So I agree with you across the board about all that, Dave. But I think a lot of guys, you know, Carl Lawson will have questions about his run defense and lack of tackles and things like that. And they're valid concerns. I'm not denying that one bit. That's part of the process of trying to evaluate these guys and makes the projection tough. Because, you know, what they do in college oftentimes is not what they're going to be asked to do in the NFL.
And I think with a guy like Harris is, you know, he was sent after the quarterback. He didn't drop, as far as I can tell, a whole heck of a lot. And really the same goes for guys like Lawson. I mean, how much did you really see him drop in the film that you've studied of Lawson?
Yeah, no, he didn't drop a lot. Harris, from what you said, hasn't dropped. But, you know, that's what the combine is so important. That's why the pro days are so important. And I thought Harris, at least I remember very specifically, looked really good in drills. He's, and just watching even the sack reel that you've put up, he's a very easy mover. He's very fluid. And I see the traits, the you know, hip flexibility, ability to flip his hips. You can kind of project that, which is Colbert has talked about. I think he has the ability to make that transition to flip to be a 3-4 outside linebacker.
Is Charles Harris a first round talent?
Yes.
Okay. Your biggest concerns about Harris are?
Well, I do want to go back and keep watching him more, because he's a guy I have to circle back to, because someone else had already done the report on him for Depot. I obviously, you have to trust the tape. And when we talk about prospects, it's always about what does the tape show, because he tested pretty poorly. Now, he did have some slightly better numbers at his pro days. Vertical was much better, up to 37.5 inches. But his 10 split isn't great. You know, his 40 time is people are going to talk about Jarvis Jones, which is a very easy and maybe kind of lazy comparison to make, but you have to sit there and say, okay, we trust this guy enough, or we believe this tape so much that we're looking past these numbers that might not be considered first round type numbers. You know what I'm saying?
Right, absolutely. And I, you know, look, I understand looking at the measurables and comparing to Jarvis Jones. That is easy, but it's also lazy when you look at his tape. You know, especially when it comes to the how he won sack-wise, I have a lot higher level of comfort when it comes to his pass rush ability compared to Jarvis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's a great reason why these reels should exist, and that's why I think you do a great job, and that's why they are important, because, yes, they are, of course, a highlight reel, but they're a highlight reel about the most important plays, and you want to get that immediate context of how this guy won. Was it a bunch of covered sacks, or was it scheme the way it was oftentimes with Jarvis Jones at Georgia, or was it his ability to just create on his own? I mean, cut-ups are very common in the NFL, where you want to get situational football in specific plays and specific moments to be able to try to view a guy, so I think there's a lot of value to that. And while Harris was used on stunts, and some of that did help free him up, which actually I think is a plus, because it might, you know, help his transition to the NFL doing some of that, he definitely won most of the time, you know, just on his own by setting up the tackle and beating him clean. So I think that kind of checks that box and separates him very much from Jarvis Jones.
And you know, when it comes to Jarvis Jones, let's admit that he did get better against the run as he progressed.
Sure, yeah. The issue with Jarvis was always as a pass rusher. It really wasn't anything else.
All right. You know, a guy that we haven't talked a lot about, Jordan Willis.
We got yelled at.
And, you know, I immediately went back to his film. Admittedly, I had only done just surface stuff on Jordan Willis. But over the course of the last week, I've watched a lot of film on him. An impressive guy. And a guy that, should he be in consideration as a first-round guy?
Yeah, definitely after the way that he tested, because he was such a controversial guy, and maybe is even more so after the combine, because people knew he was very productive and he had a good motor and all that stuff. But the question was, you know, his ability to bend the edge, and did he have the hip and ankle flexibility? And often on tape, you didn't really see that because he would get run up the arc so often. But he just went out there and crushed the combine. I forget all his numbers. I don't have them in front of me, but his 10 split was one of the top ones. I think it'd be like a 1.59 or 1.610 split. His explosion numbers were fantastic. And the biggest thing, his three cone was amazing. Let me pull up the number because I have to get you guys the number to put that in the proper context. It was one of the best three cone times, and three cone is usually one of the top drills to help measure some of that flexibility. Again, it's not to say all end all, but it's going to be certainly useful. And let me get the number up for you guys here.
And I thought he had some flexibility to him, some bend in some of those sacks.
It was very hit and miss for me. Sometimes I thought he had, sometimes he was getting run up the arc. But his three cone time was a 6.85, which is fantastic. His short shuttle, a 4.28, which is pretty good. 39-inch vertical, 10.5 broad, a 1.54 10 split is what we have here, a 4.53 40 overall. I mean, he had every box that you're looking for. People still think that numbers don't measure up with the tape, and that's understandable. But, Willis is kind of going to be in that top 40 range, I think.
And I think one of the other, if you want to call it a knock on him when it comes to the Steelers, is he predominantly played on the left-hand side. Now, will the Steelers, if you draft a guy like that, think about possibly moving Bud Dupree over to the other side? I think that's a possibility for sure.
A lot of these guys played on the left-hand side, though. Lawson did. Rivers did. So, that's something you probably have to deal with no matter who you draft.
Yeah, Lawson, though, played a little bit more on the right, I think, than Willis did, though.
Lawson flipped a little, but he was primarily a lefty end.
Right. Where are you at on Willis right now?
I like him, I understand the concerns, and I have those written in my scouting report of him, but, I mean, it's hard to ignore these numbers of how well he tested, and it's just one of those things where, I mean, everywhere he's gone, Dave, the guy has succeeded. He had a great career at Kansas State. He's regarded as a high character, high IQ guy who reads tech as well. You know his film study is going to be sound. He goes to the Senior Bowl, had a pretty quiet week of practice, not going to lie, but then he goes to the game. I think he had 2.5 sacks, one or two forced fumbles, couldn't be blocked. He goes to the combine. Everyone's saying he's going to test poorly and his three cone's going to suck. And the guy has probably the best workout of anybody, any position at Indy. I mean, he's a guy that every time someone doubts him, he's able to overcome that and he proves you wrong. And at some point, you just got to embrace that and say, yeah, this guy can play. And again, I get the concerns with him. Does that three cone time truly match up with his tape? And sometimes no, but the guy just wins and he's successful at every single level. He's a great athlete. He's a smart pass rusher. He's going to be good against the run. It's at some point you just got to say this guy can win. He's proven us wrong.
He played a lot of run snaps at Kansas State, too. He was on the field. If you want to talk about a guy with very consistent college production over a course of 3 years, it's him, right?
That's a great point. Yeah, good coaching under Coach Snyder. Very productive. Let me pull up the exact numbers here. I'm pulling up his profile I did last week. In his career, 40.5 tackles for a loss, 26.5 sacks, 6 forced fumbles, 11.5 of those came last year. Was the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year in 2016. He's got 39 career starts. I mean, the guy has that just from the resume. If you look at his production, and you look at his measurables and his workout numbers, I mean, he kills every single box So it's just hard to say. You know, how many times can we say, no, he can't win, and he proves us wrong, and we keep coming back and saying, no, he can't win here. You know, eventually you have to give in, and I have.
Now, what was the deal at the Senior Bowl practices with him?
He was quiet. I mean, maybe I just didn't get, you know, wasn't focusing on him enough, but I really didn't learn a lot about him. Other than I heard some stuff about teams talking to him, and he was giving really good answers, and it was really good in the interview process. But whenever, like, at time for the game, you know, I was back home watching the game like everybody else, and the guy took it over. Two sacks and a forced fumble during the Senior Bowl. So there's just a light that comes on for him. He rises to the moment in that level of competition, and consistently in every moment, he's proven to be one of the top guys around, whether that's at Kansas State, whether that's at the Senior Bowl, or whether that's at the Combine.
Not that it goes a lot into how I view prospects when it comes to the Steelers, but the closer it gets to draft time and I weed through a little bit more of the tape, I always like to try to track down some of their postseason interviews, you know, just to, mm-hmm. to see, you know, how intelligent does this player come off? Can I see this guy talking to the Pittsburgh media, you know, after being the first round pick? And surprisingly, when it comes to Willis, there's not a lot of that interview video out there. Now, I did come across one, I think, from the Senior Bowl. He comes across as a very intelligent, you know, humble, you know, type player, and the type guy that tape aside, you could say, okay, well, I can see him. You know, his character and the way he handles himself, I could see him being that guy. Now, of course, you know, that's a small part of the process, but it's just something that I always like to do, late stages of when I'm trying to determine who might be the first-round pick. There's no reason to think that this guy shouldn't be a first-round pick, right?
Well, I don't know exactly where some of these guys are going to get slotted, just because it is such a saturated edge class that someone's going to have to fall out. But there's no reason I think he's not going to be anything lower than a top 40, top 45 pick. I think you make a great point about the character and the IQ, and it is important to learn who these guys are and how they conduct themselves in an interview and how they come off, and just try to get some sort of feel for that. But yeah, very intelligent guy, very smart guy, and it translates on the field too. He's a guy that can string together multiple pass rush moves in one play. He can speed bull you and then rip under or arm over you. He's a guy that I think his bend is at his best whenever he's able to get into your pads. He's got a great punch and great hand placement, and he's able to shed off you that way. If he's not able to initiate contact first, he's getting run up the arc, then he has trouble trying to bend the edge and dip and get under. But he's a guy that's going to thrive with contact, where he's going to be able to convert speed to power and then have a move off of that, where he wants to get into your pads, get in control, get you off base, use his length, which is very good, 33.5-inch arms, to get in control. So I think that football IQ, or that IQ that you see in the interview process, translate as a football player, and he's a very smart guy who reads tackles, will counter off where the tackle set is. It's not a predetermined move, which is pretty advanced for a college guy. It's usually they just have their move, which is their best move, and they're going to keep trying it till it wins. Willis is going to read the tackle and use what move is best to beat the tackle set, which is very impressive.
Solomon Thomas is a guy in the early stages of this year's draft process, classified as an edge. And when I think of edge, I think of defensive ends in a 4-3, or I think about outside linebackers. After getting deep into his tape, posting his sack video, and watching a lot of him, I don't think he's an edge.
You think, what, he's an interior guy?
Yeah, I think he's more of an interior guy, I think, is his best fit. That's where I see him win the best or most, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you view him as a guy that could be play on his feet as a 3-4 outside linebacker?
No, I think he's more of a hand down guy. I mean, I haven't seen much of him because I expect him to go within, let's say, the top 15 or 20 picks. I don't really think he's on the Steelers' radar, so I haven't spent a lot of time with Solomon Thomas, but I think your assessment's pretty fair.
He's a productive player. I mean, there's not a lot not to like about him. I just don't think when it comes to the Steelers, he's that kind of fit. Another guy that I wrote about or posted the compilation video this morning, Tim Williams out of Alabama.
Before we get, you want to do the Craig ad and give Craig a shout out?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steelers fan and Pittsburgh native, Craig is a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or you can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And speaking of Craig, we've got an email from one of our listeners here. I'm trying to find it here real quick. Where it was, and I all of a sudden I can't.
Isn't that the worst? You think you have it, and you gotta look it up. And...
Yeah. In short, one of our listeners had a question for Craig, and I assume mortgage related. And you know, Craig gave him some great advice. It did not result in a transaction, I don't think, for Craig. But the listener, and once again, I'm sorry I don't have this in front of me, was thoroughly impressed with the way Craig answered his question and sent him down the right path. So, you know, if you got any questions about mortgages, you know, feel free to give Craig a call. And if he can't help you, I'm sure he'll lead you in the right direction. You know, that you should go in. So as always, thanks again to our sponsor, Craig Oxane, mm-hmm. and we appreciate the email from the listener as well, too, who reached out to him. Tim Williams, a guy that very productive pass rusher at Alabama. I think the concerns with him are that he was mostly used as a pass rusher. He played, I think even Pro Football Focus has a stat on him during the last 3 years. He played 168 run snaps. Now he had, you know, a good share of, I think he had 44 stops in those 168 run snaps, but he was primarily used as a pass rusher and, in fact, probably a situational pass rusher. So, in short, there's a lot of projected evaluation, I think, when it comes to Tim Williams, as, you know, outside of his tape. You know, when it comes to him, you know, it's hard not to like what you see on tape. But once again, are his highlights his highlights?
He was a guy that, you know, early on in this draft process was viewed as a first round pick. But the more that gets known about Tim Williams and maybe more about known about other guys from smaller schools that didn't have the name value, I think his stock has, quote unquote, fallen. And I think he's a guy that I feel pretty confident will be there at 62 in the second round. Not that the Steelers have to take him, but you know, I always rack my mind with trying to figure out what edge rushers might be there in the second round. And Williams is one name that comes to mind. The issues with him are off the field. You know, he's got drug concerns. There's a history of drug use and failing drug tests at Alabama. And now, to Williams' credit, he's been very open and honest with the media about that. So, I mean, he's taking it on the chin and recognizing he's had problems and he has to get better with it. But that's still obviously a big concern, especially for a Steelers organization that's had probably their fill of guys getting in trouble for drugs. And then, yeah, there's a question of the combine. He didn't test very well. And like you said about being just a situational pass rusher and, of course, playing on such a uber-talented Alabama defense where it's easy to be productive on third and 10 when you're playing with Jonathan Allen and that whole group, Dalvin Tomlinson and them. So a lot of concerns with Tim Williams.
It's sort of like me with you on the podcast. You make me look a lot better than what I actually am, right?
You're going to make me tear up here on a Monday, Dave. My goodness.
But I understand the concerns with him. I understand why some have him, you know, a late first round. He's going to be off the board within the first two rounds, we think. It's just one of those guys that you better know what your evaluation is. You better have done your homework on him because there's more to him. In short, I think his sack highlight video is what he is, you know, mm-hmm. right now. You know, you could easily see him being a specialist at the NFL level, but is he mm-hmm. more than that?
Right. And if you're going to draft someone in the second round, hopefully you're shooting for something higher than specialist. Did you see him play more left or right side at Bama or both? Or
played both. I don't have a breakdown of either, but he did win on both sides. Now, okay. I think some people have pointed out in the comments, inconsistent. He either times the snap perfectly and is way ahead of it, or it looks like he's a tick late. So, okay. An inconsistent get off with him for sure. But I mean, he wins in a lot of different ways. He'll win the edge for you, a little bit of bull rush to him, played some on his feet, on top of it. But, when it comes to the Steelers and it comes to narrowing this thing down as far as edge players, 30th overall, I would tend not to include him in that group.
Yeah, I don't either. I think he's in that second tier. I would have, obviously Lawson, Rivers, Willis, Tyus Bowser, TJ Watt, who we didn't talk about last time either, all ahead of Tim Williams. And even Ryan Anderson's kind of close. I'm not crazy about Anderson either. But I think Anderson, Williams are second round options for the Steelers.
When it comes to Watt, I have not gotten extensively into his tape. I hope to make him one of the ones that I do a compilation video on. Where are you right now with TJ Watt?
Yeah, I'm sort of similar. I know Draft Breakdown just put up like, I don't know, three or four games of him. I think we've mentioned this sometime before where the ceiling seems really high for Watt, but he's a raw guy, a one-year guy who's got a lot to learn. So if you think about Steelers wanting immediate impact year one guys, that's a knock on Watt because he might not be as ready as, say, some of these other guys that have played for 3 or 4 years and just have gone through practice more often and just, are more comfortable playing outside linebacker, and Watt probably wouldn't be that guy.
Some of these other guys, where are you at with, I know kind of where you're at with Hassan Reddick, and you know where I'm at with him as well too. I view him more as an inside guy than outside than probably you do. Ryan Anderson, where are you at on Ryan Anderson? Should he be classified as a true edge?
He's borderline. If he's got a good speed to power, he's going to be good against the run, but he's not going to be a premier pass rush guy for me. I mean, he'll get drafted because of his ability to play the run, and he's got good interviews and good IQ, and people like him, but I don't see a double-digit sack guy with Ryan Anderson.
All right, Derek Barnett, have we not been talking about him because we just think he's going to be off the board?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a 4-3 guy too, so we haven't really spent a lot of time on him because of that.
All right, we know no sense talking about Myles Garrett. Taco Charlton, where are you on Taco?
The Steelers have talked to him at Michigan's Pro Day, but what is he, 6'6", 275? That just tells me he's going to be a 4-3 guy going forward, and he might end up in Cincinnati. That feels like a good place for him to land.
Exactly. All right, now, do you want to circle back to Reddick and Rivers?
Well, I mean, we've talked about them a good bit. I mean, everyone knows my feelings on Reddick. I don't think he's going to be there anymore. I think Rivers is definitely in the conversation. And I've said it with Rivers is that there's everything to like about Derek Rivers. I mean, he did well at the Senior Bowl, which was very important to show he could play up a level of competition. He did very well at the Combine. He tested as well as basically any other guy. The only issue with Rivers, generally speaking, is just that competition level. But if you can look past that, you have a really good player in Derek Rivers.
I think you know, and maybe the listeners know where I'm heading with all this now. Where are we at as far as edge guys that could potentially be the pick 30th overall? And I'm going to jump you on this one. And well, okay, well we spent some time on on Takaris McKinley, so I suppose maybe he's deserves some talk in here. I would narrow it down to four guys, Alex. I would narrow it down to Charles Harris, Takaris McKinley, Carl Lawson, and Willis. Is that fair? Is that where you're at? Would you add anybody to that?
No, I think McKinley's a good ad. It's a good point by you because he is coming in for a visit. And so if we don't like him, it doesn't matter because he could still be in the conversation. And clearly he is. I would Willis could be the pick. I don't want to say any of these guys can't be the pick, but I would swap out Willis and I would put in Tyus Bowser instead of Willis if you made me narrow it down to like four guys. So what is it? Harris, Lawson, Rivers, and Bowser.
Are you concerned that according to I'm not as high on Bowser as you are. I like the kid. I don't view him as a candidate for 30th overall. Are you concerned at all that pass rush percentage 51.2% according to Pro Football Focus?
In terms of that's how often he rushed the passer?
Correct.
That doesn't surprise me at all because just looking at his tape, I mean, you know, he dropped the coverage a ton. But that's the attractive part with Bowser is that he's played on his feet so much. He's played in the coverage. He excels in coverage. And he's going to have, I think, a much easier transition to the NFL than, let's say, Carl Lawson or Charles Harris, because playing on his feet is natural for him. It's what he does. So if anything, that heightens my opinion of him, to be honest with you.
So you would put Bowser ahead of Willis?
I'll have to really sit down and make a final list, but I think in terms of what the Steelers are going to be looking for, I think it would be Bowser over Willis, yeah.
All right.
I like Willis. Again, I just spoke very highly of Willis. I want to make that clear.
Do we think it's going to be one of those five guys then?
If it's going to be an edge guy, or do you mean just five guys overall of any position?
I'm talking edge guy.
I mean, those are the big names. Some people are going to say T.J. Watt. That's probably the other name to throw in there. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of a lot of them. I mean, that's the big group.
And what's been consistent with our whole when it comes to you and I throughout this process is Carl Lawson's right up always in that talk. I've warmed up to Harris more after watching more of his film.
Yeah, for me, Harris still, I don't know if he's going to be there. I'm confident Lawson's going to be there, confident Rivers is going to be there. Like, not guaranteed, but confident. I don't get a great feeling that Harris is going to be there, so I haven't considered him as much as maybe you, because I just feel like he's going to be a top 25 kind of guy.
Your top two, Lawson and Rivers?
Right now, yeah, Lawson, Rivers. I put Lawson in my mock, which went up today, over Rivers. It's super close, but it came down to me that Power 5, and Auburn's going to beat Youngstown State.
The only thing about Derek Rivers, man, is the tape. I can't, you know, how many games have you seen of Rivers?
I'd have to pull up my list. I was watching a couple of full games before they came out on Draft Breakdown, so I probably have, I think, maybe three or four games on Rivers, plus the 3 days in the game at the Senior Bowl as well.
All right. I mean, I like Rivers. Don't get me wrong. I feel that I have an incomplete on him.
Watch the West Virginia game if you haven't yet to see a step up in competition. There's a cut up on Draft Breakdown, but there's also a full game on YouTube as well. But and again, I like Rivers a lot, and I want everyone to look past Youngstown State. But if you're Pittsburgh, under Colbert, only one first round pick's ever been non-Power 5. That was, of course, Big Ben in 2004, and so that's a pretty obvious trend for the Steelers.
So have we eaten this up pretty good now?
Yeah, do you want to fly through my mock, or do you want to get that on Friday?
No, let's go through your mock. Carl Lawson back in the top spot again for you, and I don't hate you for that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Dave, and good start to the Monday. But yeah, Lawson, again, it's very close with Rivers. Again, I went with Power 5. You could go outside the position. Kevin King's in play, which I have there. Melon Fuanwu's in play. We're going to hear more about pre-draft visits coming up pretty soon, I think, and that might start giving us a little clearer picture.
All right, second pick, Adoree Jackson out of USC.
Yeah, great athlete. I think he's a perfect fit in the slot. There is a high amount of return value, but again, in Pittsburgh, that might not matter too much. But I think he's a guy that could come in maybe after the first month and play in the slot. Just that hyper-athlete guy. He played against a great competition, 5 interceptions last year. I struggle to find the perfect slot guy there. Jordan Lewis's issues obviously make that a concern. Maybe Desmond King, which I have listed there. But I think Jackson's going to be that 2018, you know, day one slot starter.
I like Desmond King. I do. I just wonder if that might be too early for him there.
Yeah, I hear you.
Talk to me about Quincy Wilson and Witherspoon.
Honestly, I haven't seen really much on Wilson. I mean, I've seen a little bit with Witherspoon because I've watched Owuse. But they're just, you know, if the Steelers wanted to go with that mold, and David Todd was talking about this, and he felt pretty confident. Felt like someone was in his ear about taking big, long cornerbacks, and Wilson and Witherspoon are both that type. I think Wilson 6'1", 220 or something. Witherspoon 6'3", 215. So that's kind of the big length Artie Burns looking guys. That's why I put him there.
All right, round with the first third round pick, Kareem Hunt. We already have a profile. Did you do that or did Daniel do that one?
I did that, and I'm a big fan of Kareem Hunt. Contact balance is excellent. He runs with speed. He has some bursts. His weight's kind of fluctuated some. I'm curious what he really wants to play at and why it has. But I think he's a guy that can slide in his bells, number two, and you have a solid guy here 4 years.
Others you consider there, Wayne Gallman from Clemson, KZ, and Brad Kaya as well. It'd be interesting to – well, look, I mean, the Miami Pro Day is coming up. Count on the Steelers being there just because they're there every year, right? And, I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of good athletes there, prospects to look at this year as well. Jordan Leggett, you're higher on Leggett than I am. Why?
I am. I don't know. I feel like I'm not, unless you're really low on Jordan Leggett. I ended up putting Leggett there because Steelers have shown interest in him. They were at Clemson's Pro Day. There's a lot of guys to watch it down there. But, you know, Leggett's a guy that is going to be a vertical threat. He's going to stretch the field. And he's got size, and he's bigger than Everett, and that's kind of another reason why I went Leggett over Everett this time around. He's not a great blocker, but he has put his hand in the dirt. He does give effort as a blocker. And you know, again, I'm not crazy about the first round tight end because Ladarius Green is still there, and if he is clean and healthy, he's going to be the guy. And so I've said it before, getting that mid round tight end where, okay, if Green's playing this year, I don't feel terrible about sitting my third round pick. I feel terrible about my first round pick not getting the kind of snaps that a first round pick should. So I think it's a very happy medium to get like a third round tight end in a very deep class.
You went quarterback in the fourth round, and you went Josh Dobbs. I'm sure I haven't looked at the comments. Have you caught hell for that yet?
Yeah. Again, it's not that I want to do it, and I just really struggle to find a name because after the first two rounds, this quarterback class falls off so much, and some of the guys that could be third or fourth round picks, Brad Kaya, Nathan Peterman, they don't really gel, I think, with the Steelers offense too well. They don't have the arm strength and the vertical threat that the Steelers offense is going to ask for. So I know Dobbs might seem a little high, but quarterbacks get pushed up. That's how this thing works. And I don't know. They've talked about quarterbacks so much, I felt like I had to give him one.
All right, a guy that I admittedly don't know a lot about in the fifth round, Alex Anzalone, inside linebacker out of Florida.
Yeah, Anzalone's a guy that has not played a lot of football, 18 games in 4 years at Florida, injury after injury, but I thought he had a really nice Senior Bowl week and, you know, obviously in some insulation at inside linebacker. Moves well, he's got good size, ran well at the combine. I think it's a good depth pickup.
You went hybrid in round six with Josh Harvey Clemens out of Louisville.
This is my sleeper. This is a guy that I can get in the sixth round that I think can play day one in Pittsburgh. Maybe, again, after the first month, he could become an integral guy in sub-package football. I think he's a true hybrid guy, high pedigree guy, was a top recruit coming out of Georgia, and I think getting kicked out of Georgia, so there's a story there to figure out. But really solid open field tackler, a good athlete, a long strider. Not an elite athlete. He's not going to test like Melon Fonwu, but he's like Melon Fonwu at a much discounted price. So I really like Harvey Clemens.
All right, round seven. You got him a wide receiver in Mac Hollins out of North Carolina.
I got him a Steelers fan, too. Mac Hollins is a Steelers fan. Great story. Hard worker. Was a walk-on at UNC. Got a scholarship after 2 years. A vertical threat who averaged over 24 yards per catch in 2015. I think he has had a touchdown every couple of catches because he was solely a deep threat. But a great special teamer as well. He was a special teams captain for 3 years. I have a couple of gifts on his scouting report, which went up today. So that's a guy that maybe could make that surprise push to knock a guy like DHB off the roster, because I don't think a true receiver, if you're going to draft one late, is going to knock DHB off the roster. But Hollins, who does a lot of DB, DHB kind of things, vertical threat, good blocker, special teams value, could do that. But an easy guy to root for is going to make that room better. I really like Mac Hollins.
All right, what have we failed to hit in this episode that we said we were going to hit?
I think that's about everything. You got anything coming later today or any other? You doing Jordan Willis sack highlight next?
I did Jordan Willis.
Oh, you did Jordan Willis.
Yeah, Jordan Willis is up. I put Tim Williams up today. I don't know. So, is it worth me to do DeMarcus Walker?
I wouldn't, unless they bring him in for a visit or something. I'd probably stay away.
I think who would you like to see me do a compilation on?
You know what? Give me Chris Wormley, the defensive end from Michigan. I know defensive line might not be their highest priority, but I think they're going to like Wormley, and I think they met with him and dined with him at Michigan's pro day. So, you know, give a little love to the defensive line.
All right. I might get started on that as well too. And let's see. I put that Tim Williams up this morning. We have a few more profiles in the hopper from other players. I've got to get my mock draft. You're on version 4, and I've done version 1. I hate doing these though.
I go,
people say, well, you can't do one without using a mock draft simulator, and then you do those, and some of these guys that you just, you know, on the flip side, I go, you know, I get on people for in these mock drafts for telling me, oh yeah, he definitely won't be there. And then I turn around and use these mock draft simulators, and I find myself going, man, there's no way in hell that guy's going to be in there. Mm-hmm. So I'll cobble one of these together this week, version number 2, and probably quickly follow that up after the, you know, right around the time to mid the pre-draft visits get underway, which should happen here fairly soon. So just look for, you know, look, we keep the content pumping at Steelers Depot, and hopefully you enjoy it. If there's somebody, a sack breakdown that or a sack compilation that you want to see, feel free to shoot me an email on that as well. And before we get out of here on this episode, I should tell you that the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than evaluating edge rushers. Let Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even in Arizona, that's where the league meetings are. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can always email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company. Company in NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.